Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as the News and Observer, The Week magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. This opening number, Bandstand Boogie, the instrumental version recorded by Les Elgert. We'll be hearing more about American Bandstand, our selected genre for rock music today, later on in today's program, and it'll close it out as well. But first, these trivia questions. Our trivia questions come to us today from www.allenskitchen.com and www.classicbands.com. Question number one. From 1977 to the end of its ABC run in 1987, the American Bandstand Show opened and closed with a rendition of the theme song, which was recorded for a 1975 album, Trying to Get the Feeling. Who was that artist who performed and penned the words to this song? Hint, this singer also had a 1977 Grammy-winning hit titled I Write the Songs, even though he himself never wrote that song. And he also is known for such recordings as Mandy and Copacabana at the Copa. Who was he? Question number two. What was the first act to perform live, quote-unquote, on American Bandstand? Hint, this group placed nine songs on the Billboard Top 40 between 1954 and 1961, including this one. Bum, 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 what's the name of this group? They were the first ones to perform, quote-unquote, live on American Bandstand. The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. The transition section of today's program is brought to us once again by BGORecords.com, today in rock history. And today is March 25 and 26. What were the number one hits this Friday and Saturday in history? Well, back in 1967, it was the Turtles at number one with Happy Together. And back 2 years after that, 1969, this Friday and Saturday, it was Marvin Gaye, I Heard It Through the Grapevine. Back in 72, it was America, Horse With No Name at number one. And back in 77, 5 years after that, it was Hall & Oates, Rich Girl at number one this Friday and Saturday. And finally, back in 1989, it was Madonna at number one, Like a Prayer. If you were born on March 25, you share a birthday with Johnny Burnett, Dreamin', 1934, March 25. Aretha Franklin, March 25, 1942. And Elton John was also born on March 25, 1947. Or if you were born on March 26, you share a B-Day with Diana Ross, Supremes, March 26, 1944, Steve Tyler, Aerosmith, March 26, 1948, and Teddy Pendergrass, March 26, 1950. Miscellany in rock history this Friday and Saturday. Well, back in 1958, Eddie Cochran records Summertime Blues. Half century ago, it was Elvis Presley performing his last live show for 8 years in Pearl Harbor. 4 years later, in 1965, Bob Dylan debuts on the charts with Times They Are A-Changin'. Back in 1967, the debut LP from the Doors enters the charts. Back in 1990, Motley Crue drummer Tommy Lee is arrested for allegedly exposing his buttocks during a concert in Georgia. And finally, back in 1995, it was Pearl Jam's Eddie Vedder being rescued after being swept 250 feet offshore in New Zealand.
Somewhere beyond the sea, she is there watching for me. If I could fly like birds on high, then straight to her arms I'd go sailing. It's far beyond the star, it is near beyond the moon. I know.
In local rock news, we see this article entitled Troubadours by Dennis Harvey, published in Daily Variety on the 27th of January, 2011. An infectiously fond look at a mellow moment in rock history, Troubadours celebrates the 1970s singer-songwriter craze via portraits of leading lights James Taylor and Carole King, as well as the Los Angeles venue that became this genre's star launching pad. Morgan Neville's feature casts its thoughtful net beyond merely hooking boomer nostalgists during PBS pledge weeks. Opening montage backgrounds various roiling political factors of the 60s that fed a burgeoning folk revival and emerging new folksters like Bob Dylan. Simultaneously, mainstream pop was in a giddy yet soulful phase, one primarily sung by black artists but composed mostly by white suburbanites like New Jersey youths Carole King and Jerry Goffin of the Brill Building Music Factory. Meanwhile, equally reserved North Carolinian Taylor was wending his own way to success despite several false starts and a failed solo debut on the Beatles' Apple label. King, meanwhile, after growing up too fast as a teenage careerist and 18-year-old New Jersey bride, found liberation as a divorced single mother in Los Angeles, rock's new capital. Once Taylor's star was finally on the rise, we see him in introduce a spine-tingling Fire and Rain at the Newport Folk Fest. He hired King to play and sing backup, encouraging her to seize the limelight with her own songs. Her LP, Tapestry, wound up as one of the biggest-selling albums ever and a commercial peak to the singer-songwriter phenom. Simpatico as friends and colleagues, the two artists continued contributing to each other's works. Their affectionate banter today lends Troubadours an intimate tenor. Both owed much to the Troubadour, a West Hollywood club that became an industry hangout and ground zero for new folk and country rock artists. Among those recalling revelatory experiences there are Kris Kristofferson, Bonnie Raitt, Cheech and Chong, Jackson Brown, and even Steve Martin. Even Elton John got his big break here, but flamboyant impresario Doug Weston was a greedy kingmaker, signing fledgling artists to penny-ante contracts they'd be forced to honor once they achieved stadium-scale success. That and other grievances led to the eventual launch of the Roxy, a more artist-friendly rival venue that aimed to bury Weston, and did. Not everyone loved soft rock. Some at the time lamented its navel-gazing and wondered where rock's rebellious edge had disappeared. Hearing vintage or new performances, both Taylor and King sing as well as ever, of such durable songs as Carolina on My Mind, So Far Away, etc., it's hard to reject that assessment. Crafty packages, sound quality is excellent in both delightful archival and first-rate new performance footage.
I guess I'm just a lucky guy. Here I'm about to tell you why. It's strictly on account of my sweet potato pie. Yeah.
This next article, written by Marvin Minsky in Computer Music Journal from the fall of 81, volume 5, number 3, Music, Mind, and Meaning. Why do we like music? Our culture immerses us in it for hours each day, and everyone knows how it touches our emotions, but few think of how music touches other kinds of thought. It is astonishing how little curiosity we have about so pervasive an environmental influence. Why do we like music? We all are reluctant, with regard to music and art, to examine our sources of pleasure or strength. In part, we fear success itself. We fear that understanding might spoil enjoyment. Rightly so. Art often loses power when its psychological roots are exposed. No matter. When this happens, we will go on, as always, to seek more robust illusions. I feel that music theory has gotten stuck by trying too long to find universals. Article skips down. To be sure, we can't account for tastes in general because people have various preferences, but this means only that we have to find the causes of this diversity of tastes, and this in turn means we must see that music theory is not only about music, but about how people process it. Article skips down. What use is music? Why on earth would anyone want to learn such things? Geometry is practical. For building pyramids, for instance. But of what use is musical knowledge? Here's one idea. Each child spends endless days in curious ways. We call this play. A child stacks and packs all kinds of blocks and boxes, lines them up and knocks them down. What is that all about? Clearly, the child is learning about space. But how on earth does one learn about time? Can one time fit inside another? Can two of them go side by side? Article skips down. Rhythm and redundancy. A popular song has 100 measures, 1,000 beats. What must the Martians imagine we mean by those measures and beats, measures and beats, measures and beats? The words themselves reveal an awesome repetitiousness. Why isn't music boring? Is hearing so like seeing that we need 100 glances to build each musical image? Some repetitive musical textures might serve to remind us of things that persist through time, like wind and stream. The article skips down. As differences in change are sensed, the rhythmic frames fade from our awareness. Their work is done, and the messages of higher-level agents never speak of them. That is why metric music is not boring. Good music germinates from tiny seeds. How cautiously we handle novelty, sandwiching the new between repeated sections of familiar stuff. The article skips down and ends with this. So, why do we like any tunes in the first place? Do we simply associate some tunes with pleasant experiences? Should we look back to the tones and patterns of mother's voice or heartbeat? Or could it be that some themes are innately likable? All these theories could hold truth, and others too, for nothing need have a single cause inside the mind. So, what do you know about today's featured theme, American Bandstand? Well, we happen to have two teenagers in the studio with us today to help us gain an understanding of this symbol of American rock. This interview includes the actual words taken from a YouTube clip entitled Raid a Record, American Bandstand. Only the names and songs have been changed to protect the innocent. Janice S. and Edward S. will be reading the roles of Janice Rizzuti and Steady Eddie, respectively. And what's your name and age?
Janice Rizzuti. age 16.
What kind of shoes are those?
I don't know. They're just square-toed.
Comfortable?
Yeah.
They sort of look like old world shoes. Interesting. Let's find out who else is involved here.
I'm Eddie Moore, but just call me Steady Eddie.
How old are you, Ed?
I'm 16.
Okay, rate the record between 35 and 98, if you will, and be very honest. Sometimes it's painful, but do be honest. This is a group called Sha-na-na. Let's see what you think of this one, Witch Doctor.
I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. And then the witch doctor, he told me what to do. He said that...
Okay, that's Witch Doctor. Eddie, we'll go to you first. We'll break precedent. We should do ladies first, but Janice has done this before, so we'll give Eddie a shot at it.
Okay, I rated it 90 because I like the tambourine in it and the simple beat.
Think it'll be a hit?
Yes, yes I do. I think it'll be a real big hit.
Obviously, a 90 means you like it. Janice, would you agree or disagree?
I agree. I rated it an 85, and I thought it, the tambourine came out real good. And you can dance to it. It has a nice beat to it.
Do you think that a musical signature, such as a tambourine or a rough drum in the background, does that make a difference?
Right. I think so. I think it really brings out the record.
Okay, fair enough. We have a 90 and 85. Let's see, a 90 and 85. 87 and a half. Let's see what they think of this one. We were talking to those people from Volare. This is going to be the theme song. It's sung by a youngster named Bobby Rydell, and it's called Volare. Alrighty, it's called Volare. It's done by Bobby Rydell. Janice?
Well, I rated it an 85. You can't dance very good to this type of music, but I think it's good for a television show.
All right, Eddie?
Yes, I rated it 80. It sounds like a real good Western theme for a television show, but that's about all.
Do you think this will be a bestseller?
No, I don't.
How about you, Janice?
Well, I think it might be.
It has a chance. Well, very interesting comments. And out high-rated record is 82.5 for Volare, so one by Sha-na-na, right? 87.5 and 82.5. We thank you very much, Steady Eddie. Janice, nice to have you with us. That puts the top on this half hour, but there's a lot more still coming up. Now, this is a group called The Platters with their big hit, Only You.
Only you can make all this world seem right. Only you can make the darkness bright.
Steady Eddie has volunteered to read a history of one of his favorite songs. The following information is taken from www.wiki.answers.com. Ed, what is this favorite song of yours that you've chosen to review?
Well, it's a song by a group called The Cordettes, and I really like to dance to it. It's called Lollipop.
Well, let's hear a few bars, and then you can describe it.
The original song Lollipop was written by Julius Dixon and Beverly Ross for the duo Ronald and Ruby, recorded in 1957, released in 1958, reaching number 20 in the charts. But as the people learned that Ruby and Ronald were an interracial group, as were the songwriters Dixon and Ross, television appearances that had been previously booked were canceled, and interest in the song disappeared. But then, the Cordettes released this song soon afterwards, and it reached number 2 on the Billboard Pop, and number 3 on the Billboard R&B charts in the U.S., and number 6 in the U.K. Over the years, the song was covered by many groups in places like Argentina and England, and it was eventually used in a Dell commercial throughout the United Kingdom. I really like this song.
Well, it's easy to see why. It's so danceable. Thanks again, Steady. Finally today, Janice Rosati will read a review of one of her favorites. The information contained in this review comes to us from jazzstandards.com. What song have you chosen for us, Janice?
Well, I like this tune a lot. It's sad, but makes a wonderful slow dance song, especially as a lady's choice. It's called Misty, and it's by Johnny Mathis.
Well, let's take a listen to a snippet from this song, and then you can describe it for us.
Up a tree, and I feel like I'm clinging to a cloud I can't understand. I get misty.
This song actually began as an instrumental piece by a jazz group called the Errol Garner Trio in 1954. In 1955, Johnny Burke wrote the lyrics, but it remained relatively unknown until Johnny Mathis made it famous in 1959. Although it was never a number one hit, Misty has been performed by hundreds of artists. Even Ray Stevens, remember him? He's that guy who did Ahab the Arab, recorded it. Except he did it with a banjo, a fiddle, and steel guitar. And that version won him a Grammy Award. The lyrics were difficult to write, since the words had to fit the already written instrumental music. But Johnny Burke put his lovesick romance words to the music, and the rest is history. The song has been named one of the 25 most performed tunes of the 20th century, and no other song published since 1954 has been recorded by more jazz artists except for Satin Doll.
Well, it is a beautiful song, and I can see why it is a favorite of so many of you teenagers today. Thanks again, Janice, for your thoughtful comments.
Bye.
From my love, I'm too misty and too much in love.
Well, that about does it for today's program. American Bandstand was an ABC show that aired for 30 years, from August 5, 1957 through 1987. Every show featured a musical act, but B.B. King was the only performer who did not lip-sync. The teenagers from the Philly area who were regulars on the show taught popular dance steps to the rest of America. These kids knew all the major dances of the day, the slop, the hand jive, the bop, and they even invented a few, the stroll, the circle, and the calypso. The show became such a part of Americana that the podium used by Dick Clark now resides in the Smithsonian Museum in Washington, D.C. In contemporary rock, we see this review of R.E.M.'s new album, Collapse Into Now. This was published in The Week magazine on March 25, 2011. R.E.M.'s 15th album is merely an echo of past glory, says Greg Cott in the Chicago Tribune. The veteran trio from Athens, Georgia, has rummaged through its back catalog and turned out a less than thrilling record that mostly serves to remind us what it did best and when. Oberlin recreates the acoustic melancholy of Drive. Every Day Is Yours to Win is an optimistic antidote to Everybody Hurts. And All the Best turns the amps up to monster levels. But recycling has its merits, said Stephen Dausner in Paste. After writing and recording for 30 years, Michael Stipe, Peter Buck, and Mike Mills have no single aesthetic to revisit to find rejuvenation, so they've made fresh assaults on a range of band high points, from Muscular Opener Discoverer to Oh My Heart, a gentle echoing ode to New Orleans. The songs evoke the past, but they add up to an album that's no cast-off. It's a career retrospective with all new material, given 2 stars in this review of R.E.M.'s Collapse Into Now. In that same issue of The Week magazine, March 25, 2011, we see Licky Lee's Wounded Rhymes. Her new album gets somewhat better review, 3 stars. Forget that Licky Lee you met on 2008's Youth Novel, says Chris March in the AV Club. That electro-pop album recorded when Lee was 19 might as well belong to someone else entirely. The coquettish Swede, who then cooed about being a little bit in love, has had her heart broken. Sadness is my boyfriend, she sings on Sadness is a Blessing. At its core, this is an album about innocence lost. Opener, Youth Knows No Pain, is essentially Lee telling her naive younger self, you have no idea. She isn't feeling sorry for herself, though, said K. Ross Hoffman in AllMusic.com. What hasn't killed Lee has made her and her song stronger. She keeps her starkly intimate vocals and industrial clank, but creates a fuller Phil Spector-like sound by employing doo-wop arpeggios, adding hip-shaking drums and tambourines, and layering her voice to create her very own girl group. Breaking Up Never Sounded So Good, given 3 stars. So how'd you do on those trivia questions? Question 1, Bandstand originally used High Society by Artie Shaw as its theme song, but by the time the show went national, it had been replaced by various arrangements of Bandstand Boogie composed by Charles Albertine, including the big band version performed by Les Algard, which opened today's program, by the way. Remembered by viewers of the Daily Version from 1977, however, to the end of its ABC run in 1987, the show opened and closed with Barry Manilow's rendition of the theme Bandstand Boogie, which he originally recorded for his 1975 album, Trying to Get the Feeling. So the answer was Barry Manilow. And answer number 2, the first act to perform live, actually most live performances on this show were lip-synced by the singers, on American Bandstand was, and I played a snippet from one of their songs, The Cordettes. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after a broadcast. So